Hello everyone, I'm Magnus. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer of Tetra Consulting. Welcome to another one of Tetra's Fireside Chats, and we're back after the summer. I hope you had a good summer. And I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Sean Lundy, who is the Chief Strategy Officer here at Tetra Consulting. And actually, it was Sean who kicked off our very first Fireside Chat at the start of the year when we talked about Building Safety Act and other things. I suspect we're going to be talking about that again quite a lot. Seems like 5 minutes ago when we actually kicked this off. Not really certain what we're doing with these fireside chats, but what they have evolved into is useful conversation with people who work in the industry in all sorts of different roles, sharing their experiences and insights. So today, I'm really pleased to be joined by Sean, who's going to give us his perspective on many things. And we all know Sean from seeing him at various events, but Sean is a man of many titles. So why don't we start off by finding out what else, apart from working at Tetra, that you're up to and how engaged with the industry you are, Sean?
Yeah, thanks, Magnus. In addition to the day job, I do a number of other bits and pieces. I have the privilege of sitting on the IOSH presidential team as vice president. I also chair the IOSH Construction Community Committee. Both those roles are very important, of course, for the wider community of health and safety. I also sit on the board of the Property Institute, of course, looking at not only the management of firms that work into residential property management, but also individual members and their competence in that sector. And of course, there's huge challenges there. So again, real privilege to be able to work at the highest level there. Recently I was appointed as technical author for by the ICC, the Industry Competence Committee, to support them writing a new guidance document on organisational competence and the management of organisational competence.
Thank you very much. Right, so Building Safety Act dominated our conversation at the start of the year, and it's still dominating our conversation now. At a recent event we had with some senior leaders, it was one of the big topics of conversation, people asking each other whether it actually had a back through yet. Sean, can you just start by giving us a perspective on where we are right now with all of this?
So, I think last time we spoke, there were challenges around understanding what the requirements were around building assessment certificate, writing those safety case reports, resident engagement strategies and mandatory occurrence reporting systems. Those challenges are ongoing. I think what we've begun to see is more information coming out of the regulator and indeed government. So the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government have published figures on how effective the regulator has been in terms of progressing with building assessment certificates, but also gateway to application. So I'll talk a bit more about that process, the building control process that's in place for higher risk buildings. And some concerns have been raised about backlog of applications and delays and lack of guidance. And this has led to calls for more government oversight of this area. So the Building Safety Regulator will be moving away from the Health and Safety Executive. I believe that was always the plan, but that's now being accelerated. There is a Lords inquiry into the effectiveness of the Building Safety Regulator being led by Baroness Taylor. And that has led to a call for evidence from stakeholders to really sort of inform government, or give them some examples, if you like, or indeed some tangible evidence as to what's going on and the impact of some of these delays. So I think in the general press, we've seen quite a lot of reports of delays in terms of house building. You know, there's a housing shortage, new homes, blocks not being completed because of the delays brought about by the new regime. So this looks very negative. I mean, of course, the whole idea of the Building Safety Act and the post-Grenfell, the inquiries and the recommendations was to improve the standards and qualities of homes, but also, very importantly, the safety for not only people that build those homes, but also the people that go and live in them. And unfortunately, what we have seen is a process which led to quite a lot of bureaucratic delay, and that's been a real concern. So, that sounds very negative, but I think looking forward more positively, there is a great awareness of this now. I think the regulator itself is arming itself with that information, and hopefully it will look to resource itself more effectively and overcome some of those delays and backlogs. So I think, you know, we've still got a long way to go. You know, we're not really seeing the regime settle perhaps in the way that was expected. So these things seem to take an awful long time. And that's led to quite a lot of frustration in the industry. And indeed, a lot of cost as well. So there's a lot of questioning around the proportionality of the regime. Is it actually delivering the outcome, which is obviously safer buildings for everyone and a sustainable building stock? Or is it creating a lot of hoops that people have to jump through, which is costing a lot of time, money and effort? And we just need to try and get that balance right. So it is absolutely essential, I think, that we improve safety and quality of buildings. And we've got to do everything we can to achieve that. But at the same time, we've got to do it in a way which is manageable, effective, and not doesn't cost the earth, basically. So, you know, we need to think about refining the processes, I think, very importantly. But the regulator has a very strong role to play. And I think last time I mentioned that, and I think the evidence we're seeing is that they do need perhaps more resource to help overcome some of this backlog that we're seeing.
Thank you. And you touched on Gateway 2 a little bit earlier when you were talking. What's the bottleneck, do you think, with Gateway 2 response?
So, I mean, back in 2024, when the Building Safety Regulator became the Building Control Approval Authority for high-risk buildings, so those buildings over 18 metres with two or more domestic units, I think they underplayed a little bit the volume of applications that had come through. And you see applications for two reasons. So, the gateway process, just to kind of very straightforwardly remind everyone, is, you know, there are three stages: gateway one, gateway two, gateway three. Gateway one is typically a planning phase, so that's more under planning legislation. When we move to gateway two, that's really akin to the building control approval process that exists for all building work. So regardless of whether it's a high-risk building or not, all building work would require building control approval. It's just that in a higher-risk building, we've introduced a new regime, the gateway two process, which is a bit more onerous. There's more scrutiny and more demonstrations are required around competence and change control plans and so on. So this is something that hasn't existed before. So for new builds, of course, they have to go through gateway one and then gateway two. For existing buildings, what people are realizing, of course, is that those buildings require refurbishment, renovation, and different bits of work need to be done in those buildings. Some of that work will be building work, and therefore it will have to go through this gateway process, the gateway two. And that's that. The people that are sort of working on that have probably never had to do it before. The guidance wasn't entirely clear, although the Building Safety Regulator is improving that all the time. And that's led to a lot of backlog. So we've seen a huge delay in those processes. So some of those delays were amounting to sort of 3, 4, 5 months, even longer, I've heard of. The regulator now is committed to reduce those waiting times down to weeks rather than months. And we are seeing some progress on that. But of course, they've got to overcome the backlog first. And then the next stage, I suppose, where there is a little bit of concern is the Gateway 3 process, which is completion certificate. So for a new build or a new piece of building work in an existing building, it will, when it's finished, it will have to go through Gateway 3. So it will require that completion certificate. And then there is a big ask, if you like, from the regulator to demonstrate that golden thread of information to prove that the building has been built to the standard that it was initially set out to do. And again, that's going to sort of put a lot of pressure on industry. So I think we're seeing problems at Gateway 2, and they are improving, and the regulator is working to resolve those issues. But we're also probably anticipating a few issues at Gateway 3 as well. So I think really the ask to industry is to anticipate that a little bit, maybe better than we anticipated the Gateway 2 issues, and start working on Gateway 3 compliance or expectations now.
Thank you. Thank you. On Gateway 2, I mean, I'm seeing here that 70% of Gateway 2 applications are deemed to be invalid, placed under review or rejected. Why is that happening? Is it uncertainty, not people not knowing what to do? Or?
Well, I think it was. I think largely this was down to a lack of initial guidance. And Because again, people haven't been through this process before, so it's difficult to know what the expectations are. The Building Safety Regulator did run a series of early webinars. They gave some reasonably good information on what the expectation was at that point. But there's nothing like sort of experiencing a process and getting feedback. So I think what we're seeing is the feedback loop. Unfortunately, a lot of applications haven't met the expectations of the regulator. Now, you could argue that that is because there wasn't sufficient guidance or we didn't have any examples of what good looks like. So maybe there's an opportunity for industry to share that information. Mm. I think I'm seeing that happening more and more now, which is really good. So hopefully that will raise everyone's game, raise the bar, which is what we want to do. And not only that, but save people time and hassle of reapplying or, you know, being rejected, which is not a good feeling for anyone. Mm. Of course, the regulator very much wants to see the quality of submissions improve. So I think that's what they're after. Is anyone to blame for that? Well, I think it's probably to be expected that we would see, issues arising out of industry trying to come to terms with a new process. I think a 70% rejection and those applications not getting through is pretty high actually, and that has led to that call for the inquiry, which is what's being looked at now. So already we've seen a change in leadership of the Building Safety Regulator. There have been some measures put in early to help speed things up, a bit of a fast track process. But I think the inquiry and the evidence that comes through will be quite telling, will really show where the issue is. And hopefully there'll be sort of guidance, support and measures put in place so everyone can just get on with it. I mean, that's the idea. 70% is far too high, and I think that number's come down quite significantly actually over the last few months anyway.
Good. So a similar story with building assessment certificates. As of time of recording here, I see that 1,368 applications with only 12 being issued. What do you think is going on and what are your concerns if the pace doesn't pick up?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, we just didn't have any information or data coming out of MHCLG or the regulator. So everyone was sort of guessing about how many applications had been made. And indeed, everyone was asking each other, have you had a building assessment certificate? Have you had a building assessment certificate? It wasn't entirely clear whether anyone had been awarded one of these so-called BACs. There was a question asked in government, I think it was Alex Norris, MP, Ministry of Housing, Communities, Local Government, was asked this question, and those are the figures that came out in response to that. It was back in March, so that was somewhere in the region of 1,400 invites to apply, but I think at that point it only had just over 1,300, so a number of people hadn't complied with that invitation to apply for a BAC. And then, like you say, 12 certificates issued, very, very low number. As far as I know, that number has improved, so many more certificates have now been issued. But we've also seen quite a number of refusals as well. So I think in terms, again, that's a backlog that they're trying to clear. So they're either accelerating certificate issue where it's appropriate, but at the same time maybe looking at applications and just refusing them, sending letters out saying, we're going to come back to you in, say, 9 months' time, and we want to see, an improvement over either the way you're managing building safety risk or indeed maybe a specific area of risk. A lot of them seem to focus around structural safety, which is quite an interesting one. So again, structural safety was an area that we were desperate for more clarity on around, should we be doing structural surveys on all our building stock? What was a proportionate approach to that? So there was very little guidance on that. So people just had to make their own attempt at getting that right. What we seem to be hearing back from the regulator is they're expecting maybe more solid evidence around structural survey, which is amounting to probably doing structural surveys in a broader range of building stock than we've previously thought. So again, those things take time. So, you can't suddenly, go out there and get a structural survey done. It's very expensive. There aren't, the people to do them at volume. So that's going to be a difficult one to resolve. So I think that's probably where we're seeing things push back. What we're also interestingly seeing is people being called up and given extensive notice. So I heard of someone very recently who had a letter to say that they will be called up in April, in quite a number of months, and get ready for that. That's a slight shift, because this year, I think over the last 12 months, we've seen the regulator writing to duty holders saying, you've got 28 days, that's that sort of approach. Whereas now, I think they're preparing for the next tranche. I think there's an acknowledgement that maybe some duty holders haven't got to grips with their safety case report writing, perhaps in the way they should. So they need a bit more notice, even though the requirement is in today. So, anyone who manages or has responsibility for a high-risk building should have a safety case report in place. But we know actually a lot of people don't, because they anticipate they're not going to get called forward for another year or 18 months. So I think this is an attempt to accelerate their thinking and their approach to building safety, which is no bad thing, really.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You mentioned the House of Lords cross-party inquiry into the building safety regulator's performance. What are you hoping that's going to achieve?
Well, I'm in an interesting position because both through IOSH, my work with the IOSH Construction Community Committee, and with the Property Institute, both those organisations will probably submit information into that inquiry, or at least feed into it in some way. The Property Institute in particular will have a lot to say, because it represents its members, and a lot of those members are expressing some frustration around the building safety regulator and its performance. So I would expect to see some really tangible evidence. And actually, Tetra, we're a big company. We do a lot of work in this area, and I think we're probably sector leading in many ways. So it will be incumbent on us also probably to submit evidence. So it's not only for bodies and trade associations to feed in evidence to the inquiry. I think anyone who's had a role to play and has some good examples of perhaps where things maybe could have worked better, or indeed you might have examples of where things have worked really well. So it's not all bad. The regulator has worked well in many, many respects. They've begun to produce some really good webinars recently around the gateway process in particular. And I think they really desperately want to get this right. So this is useful to them, because this means they can remodel the building safety regulator to work better into industry, and then industry will receive that hopefully well, because it will be based on the concerns that they've raised. So the inquiry very much is about that evidence gathering process. It is running over, well, the evidence call is running over August, so I think you've got to the end of August to submit any evidence, and then the inquiry will look at that. I'm really hoping they won't take too long to look at that. I guess there'll be a lot of information come through, but hopefully a response will come out quickly and act on it quickly. So, inquiries, when you hear the word inquiry, you often think years. Mm. Grenfell inquiry has taken many years to complete, and indeed over two phases. But this will be a different sort of inquiry. This is more to do with, putting in operational processes to make sure the regulator is fit for purpose into the future, because they've got a lot to do. Industry is still a long way to go on this this issue.
And that leads into my next question. I mean, there's a lot of conversation from all sorts of different voices on the building safety regulator being fit for purpose. What's your view? And if the answer is they're not fit for purpose in your view, what needs to change?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a very difficult one to answer, because on the one hand, we are there to support our clients. As a business, we do a lot for our clients. I mean, I do a lot of work into professional bodies, TPI and IOSH, where, we're there to support our members. And we hear the frustrations as well. So I think it's really important for a regulator to be fit for purpose. It's so useful for industry to have a regulator. That might sound strange, but, if you're going to have legislation, and this legislation is about the important issue of safety and health, and making sure we build good sustainable building stock, then you need a good regulator to support that process. So at the moment, I think this is mainly about resourcing. I just don't feel the building safety regulator has enough resource to deliver on what is an enormous task and a huge challenge for them. So I don't think it would be right for me to criticize them directly and say you know, they're rubbish. I think that would be a bit churlish of me. But, you know, I think, you know, yes, they've had challenges. Yes, the evidence is clear that they haven't probably coped in these very early stages. But we still need them. You know, we need a regulator that's very effective. So I'd like to think that, you know, I think the appetite will be there. I know a number of people who work for the regulator. They're great people. They want to do a good job. You know, their heart and soul and their moral compass, if you like, is in the right place. So let's just hope that they get the resources they need. We get the regulator we need to help sort of drive this stuff forward. That's what I'm hoping. So. Yeah. I might have ducked your question a bit.
It's
one of those things. It's very easy to just say it's the regulator's fault.
Yeah.
Yes, they can do more, but they can only do what they can do with the resources they've got. Mm-hmm. So let's hope that this sort of really focuses everyone's attention on what we need from the regulator. I mean, industry has a huge role to play here as well, and you know the work I'm doing on the that guidance document will be very, very useful. And that's being industry led. Mm. So the regulator is involved in that process, but they're very much about listening to industry, getting industry to feed into that. So there's many different bodies, professional bodies, trade associations, you know, individuals, and indeed residents as well, that have the opportunity to consult on this very important document, which will hopefully raise the bar when it comes to competency.
Mm. I think it's very easy to regulate a bash, but actually the responsibility of industry is to accept that the regulator is there to enforce regulations that are for the greater good, and we just need to get do our job and do what we're supposed to do.
Absolutely. And you know, we're all human beings. You know, if you're under a lot of pressure, you know, you want to get stuff done, you put an application in, it sits there, you don't hear anything for months. You know, anyone's going to get frustrated with that. Or it gets rejected and you don't understand why. So as human beings, you know, we find that difficult. But, you know, what people are calling for, I think, is a little bit better guidance. Everyone wants the guidance because everyone wants to get it right. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. So that's something I think can be resolved. As you know, I'm a big fan of sort of educated informing. What I do, when I go out there and I speak about these things, if I'm at a conference or an event or a webinar, all I get really is a feeling coming back at me that people want to know stuff. You know, they're sponges at the moment. They're really keen to have good information. They're listening. That's all good stuff. Mm. You know, that means that the cultural shift probably is happening and has happened in many sectors. And particularly the work I do at TPI, you know, their membership, I think, is absolutely on board with this. They desperately want to get it right. They just want some good guidance to help them.
Yeah. So on the 30th of June, the government reforms are announced. There was quite a lot in there, including a fast-track process to expedite Gateway 2 applications. I mean, that looks like positive news. What's your view on it?
Well, I think it's already starting to work, actually. You know, with this new leadership that's come in, both in a chair role, working with the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government, and indeed a new chief executive as well, both from ex-fire service, interestingly, and they will bring a new sort of flavour and culture to the organisation. I think in sort of parallel with them coming on, there was already plans to work on some fast track, and some of the driver around that is this concern around delays to new homes. So there's a bigger government agenda, of course, to increase the rate of house building, some of which will include blocks of flats as well. And some of these delays and backlogs are causing a big problem with that. So I think it's pretty expected, actually, that we would see this change. What I'm hearing out there, and what we're seeing now they're publishing new data, is you can see things are improving. So we are seeing things getting through a bit quicker. We're seeing simple applications for simple bits of work that need to be expedited, getting resolved quickly. So, and there are loads of little pockets of issues as well. So if you manage a block of flats, for example, you might want to remediate all your fire doors. You need to get on with that, and because you want to make the building safer. But at the same time, you're going to have a process to go through, a few hoops to jump through, including this, the gateway process. That doesn't mean we want to bypass that process. It just means we want to make it as slick and straightforward as possible so we can get on and do that very important work. The same with maybe relieving waking watches, you know, so one way of doing that is to install a fire alarm detection system to a particular specification. But to do that, again, you may need to go through a gateway process. You probably do have to go through a gateway process. A delay really just means that you're having to continue with a waking watch and spend all that money when actually what you really want to do is to save those leaseholders money by getting that detection system in. But again, any delays that process. So I think some of the fast tracking is around some of those issues, and that's really welcome actually. Mm. So that will be a good thing to see.
Good, thank you. And my last question, we're recording this in September, it'll be January in no time when we're sitting down to talk about the year ahead, but if you just think about what needs to happen next?
Well, I think I'm really sort of inspired by the work that I think is beginning to emerge out of the Industry Competence Committee. We're going to see some good guidance there. There was always an ambition, certainly from Dame Judith Hackett's review, to change the culture of industry. One way of doing that, of course, is to make sure you're very clear about what the expectations are around competency. So I think the work that's going to come out there in terms of raising that bar, but also making it very clear what competency is, both from an individual perspective, but also from an organisational capability perspective in terms of, is that organisation capable of managing competence? And can we sort of give them guidance and give them a system of managing competence that sort of makes sense? So, I've used the word intelligent customer a lot, you know, about making sure if you've got suppliers coming into your business, how do you scrutinise them? Do you know whether they're going to meet your competency requirements? So I think competence is going to be a huge theme that will run and run, but I think we're going to see some significant changes. Another piece of work I was involved in was the new competency standard for fire risk assessors. Really exciting move. One of the Grenfell Inquiry Phase 2 recommendations is to regulate the fire risk assessment profession and also look at the fire engineering profession as well and give greater recognition. So I think we're going to see those things move from being recommendations to actually being implemented, and we're probably going to see that in 2026, which again is very exciting. Mm. I think as a business, you know, we welcome those things. I think as a community of professionals as well, I think those that you know want to do the right thing see this as a, you know, an obvious direction of travel. What they want to see though is something tangible coming in, so we actually want to see it happen. Mm-hmm. I think what's good is we're actually seeing the guidance documents coming in as well. Yeah. So we'll see those. And we've seen a few other things change as well. There's been a change in some of the guidance around delivering on fire risk assessment as well, which again is very welcome.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Sean. You're always reassuring with your clarity, and it's always good to hear from you. Just as a note, on tetraconsulting.co.uk, there are plenty of resources that we make available. There are webinars that Sean has appeared with, as well as all sorts of things that we hope that people find useful. I know that you're talking at all the regionals, I believe, and at the annual conference for TPI.
So. Yeah, I'm doing some sessions with a colleague, Mark Snelling, who is one of the consultants for TPI. We're going to be talking about competence, compliance and procurement, actually. So that fits on that competence theme. So I did a similar thing last year. I've been very privileged to do the regionals for a number of years. They're great events, actually, mm-hmm. and really good forums for learning and networking. And also, you know, I learn a lot from those events as well because I get to speak to people directly. So it's really good. So if you're there, please come and say hello.
Great. Sean, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.